Part 2. The Program. Chapter 4. A Powerful New Menu. We are setting our sights on a dramatically better result than previous diets could deliver. A result that's possible through a new approach to eating that I will explain in this chapter. If you have type 2 diabetes, you do not want to cater to insulin resistance. You want to counteract it. If you have type 1 diabetes, you want to get your blood sugar under good control, minimize your medications, and stay in good health. This chapter will show you the principles of revolutionizing your menu. Then, in the following chapters, I will show you how to put them to work as you plan your meals. For type 2 diabetes, our goal is to clean the gum out of the locks. As you recall, the fundamental problem in type 2 diabetes appears to be the accumulation of tiny amounts of fat inside muscle cells. They make it hard for insulin to do its job by blocking what is called insulin signaling. That is, they interfere with the process by which insulin opens the cell membrane to allow glucose to enter. You need to select foods that reverse this process. A diet revamp can also help protect your body from the disease process. This is crucial for both type 1 and type 2 diabetes. As you will see, these diet changes are far-reaching and powerful. You may also find, as many of our study participants did, that learning the plan's guidelines is a simple process. There are no limits on portions, calories, or carbohydrates. You will focus on what you eat, so how much you eat generally takes care of itself. But we are getting ahead of ourselves. Let's first look at the menu changes that make the diet so effective. Then, in the following chapter, I will walk you through various ways to adopt them to make this diet doable for you. To reverse the course of diabetes, clean the gum out of the locks, and allow the heart and blood vessels the best chance of reversing any existing blockages, there are three guidelines. 1. Set aside animal products. 2. Keep vegetable oils to a minimum. And 3. Favor foods with a low glycemic index. Now, there's no need to panic. I know this sounds like a tall order. I am going to walk you through each step to show you the whys and hows. For now, I just want you to understand the principles. 1. Set aside animal products. There are two possible sources of fat in the diet. Animal products and vegetable oils. This guideline tackles the first of these. Needless to say, if you are not eating beef, you will not get any beef fat. If you are not eating chicken, you will not get any chicken fat. Following this guideline means purging the animal fat from your diet. The program you are about to start omits meat, dairy products, and eggs. As you learned in Chapter 2, researchers who measured the fat inside the muscle cells of people on high-fat diets showed that the fat you eat can rapidly increase the amount of fat in your cells. Exactly the opposite happens in people who avoid animal products. As you recall, people following a vegan diet had 31% less intracellular fat compared with people on a regular diet. That means improved insulin sensitivity. That is a great start. And the next guidelines are designed to carry you further. You will get another benefit. When you set aside animal products, you do more than free yourself from animal fat, since animal products are the only source of cholesterol in the diet. Leaving them off your plate also eliminates all the cholesterol from your diet. As your cells reclaim their health, the rest of your body does too. Instead of eggs and bacon for breakfast, you might have a big bowl of old-fashioned oatmeal with cinnamon or blueberries, half a cantaloupe, and some rye toast. Perhaps you might add some veggie sausage or veggie bacon. For lunch, instead of, say, meat chili, you might have veggie chili or hearty lentil soup. If you generally go for a burger, you might choose a veggie burger. If you have dinner at an Italian restaurant, you might have spaghetti with tomato sauce and fresh basil. At a Mexican restaurant, you would skip the meat taco in favor of a bean burrito. Hold the cheese. At a Chinese restaurant, you could have your pick of the many vegetable dishes on a bed of rice. At this point, you may be thinking, spaghetti? Rice? Am I allowed to have these carbohydrate-rich foods? The answer is yes. Now, I know that people with diabetes have heard over and over that they must limit rice, pasta, and other starchy foods. But keep in mind that diabetes and overweight has been rare in countries that have made these foods their staples. The plan does have rules about carbohydrates, but they relate mainly to which ones you choose, not how much. In our studies, we have found that people who include plenty of healthy carbohydrates in their diets do better, not worse. I can understand omitting beef, you may say, but why eliminate chicken and fish? Well, the nutritional makeup of these foods may surprise you. They have significant amounts of fat and cholesterol, and they lack the fiber and healthy carbohydrate you need. Chicken, of course, is where chicken fat comes from. Even if you strip away the skin and eat only white meat, about 23% of the calories come from fat. Much of that fat is the bad form, saturated fat, the kind that pushes your cholesterol upward and worsens insulin resistance. Fish vary. Some types are lower in fat than chicken, while others, such as salmon, are quite high. But all fish have fat, and much of it, between 15 and 30%, is saturated fat. All fish have cholesterol, too. Some, such as shrimp and lobster, are much higher in cholesterol, ounce for ounce, than steak. What a difference! Animal versus plant foods. Animal foods. Beef, bottom round, lean. Fat, 37% of calories. Cholesterol, 86 milligrams. Chicken, white meat, skinless. Fat, 23% of calories. Cholesterol, 85 milligrams. Pork loin, lean. Fat, 41% of calories. Cholesterol, 81 milligrams. Salmon, Atlantic. Fat, 40% of calories. Cholesterol, 71 milligrams. Trout, rainbow. Fat, 35%. Cholesterol, 69 milligrams. Tuna, white. Fat, 21%. Cholesterol, 42 milligrams. Meat servings are 3.5 ounces, 100 grams. Plant foods. Beans, navy. Fat, 4% of calories. Cholesterol, none. Broccoli. Fat, 11% of calories. No cholesterol. Lentils. Fat, 3% of calories. No cholesterol. Apple. Fat, 3% of calories. No cholesterol. Orange. Fat, 4% of calories. No cholesterol. Rice, brown. Fat, 7% of calories. No cholesterol. Of course, some people eat fish precisely because it has fat in it. That is, a portion of the fat in fish is in the omega-3 form. Omega-3 fats are reputed to reduce inflammation and block the formation of blood clots that could lead to heart attacks. There is increasing evidence, however, that omega-3s are no panacea. In a recent British Medical Journal article, a team of British researchers reported the results of a meta-analysis, that is, a large study combining all the prior studies on omega-3s and health. Looking at 89 prior studies, the researchers found that whether omega-3 oils were consumed in fish or as supplements, they offered no significant protection against cardiovascular disease, cancer, or risk of death. Could the supposed benefits of omega-3s be just a fish story? Well, it is important to remember that fish fats are mixtures, just as all fats are. Fish oils do indeed contain some omega-3 fat, but they also contain plenty of saturated fat. As noted, from 15 to 30% of the fat in fish is plain old saturated fat. That's less than in beef, about 50%, or chicken, about 30%, but it is considerably more than you need. There is no specific need for saturated fat in your diet at all. Finally, if you are looking to lose weight, it is important to note that good fats pack in just as many calories as bad fats, That is to say, omega-3s are every bit as fattening as any other fat or oil. In studies, chicken and fish diets are routinely disappointing. When researchers test diets that include even modest amounts of chicken and fish for their effect on cholesterol, they find that these foods reduce bad low-density lipoprotein, LDL, cholesterol by only about 5% compared to an unrestricted diet. LDL cholesterol is the kind that increases the risk of heart problems. Much more effective are diets that eliminate animal products altogether. Our most recent study using this sort of diet cut LDL cholesterol by more than 20%. That's four times better than the chicken and fish approach. Now, you will notice that the diet I recommend is not just free of animal fat, it is also free of animal protein. That is important because animal protein can harm the kidneys, and protecting them is a key goal. Protein from plant sources is the way to go. If life without chicken or cheese sounds challenging, take heart from the experiences of the folks who participated in our research. They found the transition to be smooth, and within a few weeks, they were very much in charge, not only of their menus, but also of their health. They found that excess weight was already starting to melt away, their blood sugar was coming under control, their cholesterol levels were falling, and very soon many started to cut back on or even discontinue their medications. Ready for a change. In our most recent research study, half the volunteers were assigned to a low-fat vegan diet, and the other half were instructed to follow a diet based on American Diabetes Association, ADA, guidelines. Since it was to be an unbiased test, the diet assignment was done by a computer. The process was random, and neither the volunteers nor we had any influence over who got which diet. Nonetheless, I was curious about how the volunteers felt about the two diets, so I asked them. If there had been an opportunity to choose one of the diets, which one would they have chosen? I expected most to say they would have chosen the ADA diet. It is familiar to most people who have been diagnosed with diabetes, and I thought the volunteers might feel a bit of trepidation about giving up meat and dairy products. As it turned out, their preferences were just the opposite. The volunteers actually preferred the vegan diet by about 2-1. The reason, I learned, was that many of them had already been on the ADA diet and found it dull and not very effective. Many of them had heard about the advantages of a vegan diet. Others had relatives who followed a vegetarian or vegan diet, and they wanted to give it a try. Both groups embraced their assignments, and as you have heard, some did well on the ADA diet and some did not. The results with the vegan diet, however, were powerful and consistent. How Nancy and Vance did it. How did Nancy and Vance, whom you met in the introduction, fare with the diet changes? For Nancy, the change was a welcome one. She was fed up with the lack of results from the American Diabetes Association diet and thought a vegetarian diet sounded like a good approach. She wanted to lose weight, and she was sick of feeling so low on energy. This, she hoped, might be an answer. Nancy grew up in Minnesota. Her mother was not an especially talented cook, she says, but her Scandinavian family loved food. Her mother and sisters all struggled with weight problems. Like most of our study volunteers, Nancy had already made healthy changes to her diet over the years. She had stopped eating beef, ate plenty of vegetables, and had gotten away from fatty dressings, so making the shift was reasonably easy. She started her day with oatmeal topped with cinnamon and fat-free vanilla soy milk. At mid-morning, she liked to have a snack, usually fruit, such as apples, bananas, raspberries, blueberries, grapes, or oranges. For lunch, she had a hearty vegan soup, such as minestrone, vegetable soup, sweet potato soup, or chili, along with a salad made with spinach leaves, tomatoes, red, yellow, and orange bell peppers, kidney beans, and chickpeas, and other ingredients. Her afternoon snack was often fruit, rye crackers, baked tortilla chips with salsa, or hummus and pita bread. After a long day at work, Nancy had no interest in preparing a gourmet meal, so her dinners were quick and easy. A veggie burger with frozen mixed vegetables, which she microwaved. Sometimes she had nothing more than a bowl of bran cereal. A late-night fruit snack rounded things out. We gave her group a supermarket tour and provided cooking demonstrations to introduce everyone to healthful products that might be new to them. Nancy preferred to keep it simple and started making a large pot of soup to eat all week. "I am not a cook," she said, "and I find it very easy to stay on this program." Vance usually started his day with oatmeal, either plain or with apples and cinnamon. He also had toast and fresh fruit. Lunch or dinner was pasta or burritos along with fresh vegetables and fruits. Sometimes his taste called for salads, usually dressed up with beans, blood oranges, or other additions. "I had to learn to read labels," he said. "It is easy to underestimate the amount of fat or sugar in a can of food. A label might show 6 grams of fat, and you might think that means the whole can, but it actually means just one serving." For Vance, the vegan diet was the way to go. "I don't have the personality that would let me have just a small piece of chicken or a small piece of beef," he explained. "I have to cut it out altogether. For me, this is a lifestyle change." Soup Nirvana. Walter arrived at one of our research meetings to announce that he had found the perfect lunch. His local supermarket stocks a line of soups from the Tabachnik Company that happen to come in several low-fat, vegan varieties, such as black bean soup, split pea soup, and vegetarian chili. With simple, natural ingredients, a serving has about 200 calories and just a gram or two of fat. Some are available in both regular and low-sodium versions. Since they are frozen, they keep more or less indefinitely and can be microwaved to make a meal in minutes. There are many other great brands, including Dr. McDougall's, Health Valley, and Amy's, making soups that are easy, quick, and healthful. Healthier substitutes for dairy products. It may surprise you to learn that some of the biggest sources of fat are lurking in the dairy section. Milk, cheese, and ice cream once enjoyed a healthful reputation that few people questioned, but that has changed. It has become clear that these foods contribute not only fat, but also cholesterol, animal protein, and in the case of fat-free varieties, a big load of lactose sugar. Here's the lowdown on dairy, followed by the good news about how easy it is to replace it. Dairy fat. Cow's milk derives, believe it or not, 49% of its calories from fat. That is a lot by any standard. You may imagine that 2% milk is much lower in fat. Not so. That 2% figure refers to fat content by weight, which is deceptive because it is thrown off by milk's water content. When you drink a glass of milk, your body absorbs that water. What matters for your health is how much fat you are left with. Nutritionists look for the percentage of calories that come from fat because that figure is unaffected by water content. It turns out that for 2% milk, about 35% of calories come from nothing but fat. What is particularly worrisome about milk, though, is the type of fat it contains. Most of it is saturated fat, the very kind that is linked to insulin resistance and raises cholesterol levels. Typical yogurt, ice cream, and sour cream products are high in fat, too. Cheese is loaded with it. Many brands derive about 70% of their calories from fat. Dairy sugar. Fat-free dairy products have had their fat removed, but what's still there may surprise you. When the fat is skimmed away, the predominant nutrient in milk is actually sugar. Lactose, the dairy sugar. The lactose molecule is a combination of two smaller sugars, glucose and galactose. Approximately 55% of the calories in fat-free milk are from lactose. People who quite rightly avoid sodas and other sugary drinks because of their sugar content will want to be aware that milk products are a major source of sugar, too. Lactose, of course, is the sugar that causes digestive upset for many people. Lactose intolerance is a normal condition that occurs when the enzymes that allow babies to digest mother's milk naturally start to dissipate. When these enzymes are gone, lactose passes through the intestinal tract undigested. In the lower intestinal tract, bacteria start to ferment the sugar, causing gas, cramps, and diarrhea. Lactose intolerance was once thought to be an abnormality, but is now known to be the biological norm. The symptoms come on gradually, sometime after early childhood, and they are simply a sign that you have successfully passed the age of weaning.